I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You cannot Google any character ever. You Google Yoshi and you scroll down for like 3 seconds and you're going to find a foot fetish picture.
Daddy, why is Yoshi so pregnant and sweaty?
Hello and welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about 2021. When you think back to 2021, what comes to mind? Many people would consider 2020 to be the worst year of the 2020s so far, but I would argue that 2021 was the second worst. So would most people, maybe. So let's reflect, shall we? January 6th.
Thousands storming the Capitol after a rally with President Trump.
You might be thinking, Ruby, this is a video game podcast. What does the January 6th insurrection have to do with that? The answer is simple. I thought it would be funny to bring up first. Oh! 2021 was also the second year of the COVID-19 pandemic. At this point, there isn't really anything new or exciting you can say about COVID-19 that hasn't already been said by either your most punishing family member on Facebook or a random broad on Twitter who thinks poor people made it worse for some reason. And finally, the third and potentially worst part of 2021 was the fact that it was the first year of New Year's sunglasses being designed with the year on top of the frames due to the numbers in said year not being designed to fit around the frames. It was a scary and messed up time we were living in. But what about the good of the world, the good parts of 2021? Most importantly, the video games of 2021. While it wasn't a huge year for games due to the world-stopping events of the year prior, it still brought in some real bangers. For me personally, 2021 was one of the worst and best years of my life, and was also the beginning of my career in video games media. 2 years on, and I think I've comfortably made a name for myself as the greased-up freak of Australian games journalism. But let's stick with the games of 2021, and talk to somebody that's also been taking a trip down memory lane. Joining me to talk about 2021 in video games is quote-unquote political podcaster Andrew Law from Boonta Vista, and he's also my friend. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, my friend Ruby.
How you going?
Politics. That thing we all think about and talk about all the time.
I think we should start the show with a bit of political chat. What do you think about it?
I was driving my kids to school this morning and there was like a big shitty clapped out bus kind of thing driving in front of us, and someone had written "Vote No" really big on the back of it. And my kids were like, "Why does that say vote no?" And I said, "I don't want to get into that right now."
I feel like, I mean, having to explain everything that's going on with the referendum to children is really difficult. Like, but even worse to like anybody who goes online.
Yeah, like my kids are very not online. by design because they are not old enough to be left unattended online, you know.
How old are they?
They are 8 and... Well, one will be 8 very shortly. She will tell you if you meet her. Eight and 10, let's say.
8 and 10. I think I kind of got my first taste of the internet, no filter, when I was about 10. So from personal experience, it's probably really good for you that your kids aren't on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have like what I think are pretty... probably to a lot of people, pretty archaic rules about it in our house, where like we have a laptop that they can, you know, do the little school stuff or play little shitty Flash games that they love.
Cool.
We've got a PS5, we've got a Nintendo Switch, and they're over there fighting about who gets to use the computer to play like a little shitty Flash game. And that's beautiful.
Oh, that rocks. The beauty of the internet is Flash games.
Yeah. And it's like you can't take that laptop to another room. It lives out here in a common area where we can see what you're doing.
No, that's good. I'm like, when I ultimately decide to pop some out, I don't think kids should be allowed unrestricted access to the internet until they are like 18.
When people tell me stories, I'm a very judgmental parent. When people tell me stories about something that happened with their kid, particularly relating to online, there's always this big blank spot in the story where I'm like, how did everyone get there, though? Because, well, sorry, what I mean by this, right, is like a little while ago, my wife's having drinks with a friend of hers. Our kids are friends, right?
Yeah.
They're 2 10-year-olds. And my wife's friend says, oh, so the other day we discovered that our kid has a secret YouTube channel and she's posting videos of herself dancing on there. And I heard about this secondhand and was like, that's not good at all. That's not good at all. And the daughter has given the excuse, oh, you have to make a YouTube account to watch anything on YouTube, which we all know is very not true. But for me, again, the big blank spot here was like, how much completely unattended, unrestricted time does your 10-year-old have with a device to register a YouTube account? It takes ages to upload videos to YouTube.
Oh my God, it takes so long. I think I have one video uploaded on my personal YouTube account. It's unlisted and it's literally a video that I re-uploaded because I wanted to send it to a friend. And it's like a video of someone putting a Luigi plush into an open washing machine. And it's the fucking Mario Kart music. It's like, but like it's as it starts playing, he goes in the washing machine and then goes, and it's an incredible video. And I don't remember why, like when I uploaded it. I just remember that I uploaded it for the sole purpose to send to somebody because like, for some reason I couldn't send it to them with on the platform that it was on.
It is 1000% the thing that puts me off doing any kind of like video content for our podcast is we've done like, you know, some streams and stuff before and people say, oh, it disappears off like the Twitch on demand thing after a while. Can you put it up on YouTube? And you go to upload a 2-hour long video to YouTube and it says come back in 97 days. And it might not work.
Well, that's the thing. That clip was about 5-6 seconds long. It took 10 minutes to upload.
Yeah, so that makes me go, how much time did you have with that device?
She had time. She had time.
I can't believe this happened somewhere else where I wasn't.
It's just crazy because like if you're buying your kid like an iPhone or an iPad and that device has internet, then your kid's going to go on the internet because the internet is the most interesting place in the world. There's everything is on the internet. Like it's one of the most magical things that you can do is go on the internet.
Very much. There's all kinds of stuff on there. More than ever before, there's stuff on the internet.
And every day there's more.
Yep.
So like, of course they're going to go on the internet. Of course they're going to find some fucked up thing and be scarred for life. And then you're going to be like, how did this happen to my child?
My kids, I think the kinds of things that my kids would be looking for on Google would be like, drawing of this character that I like from a cartoon. It's like, you don't want to see the kinds of drawings people are putting up of Kim Possible or whatever.
You cannot Google any character ever.
Do not Google Chun-Li drawing. Do not Google it.
You Google Yoshi and you scroll down for like 3 seconds and you're going to find a foot fetish picture. Like, and it's so easy.
Daddy, why is Yoshi so pregnant and sweaty? Well, I don't want to talk about that right now. I don't want to get into all that.
And kids love asking questions. So you know that's a question that'll come up.
What's really difficult, I think, at the age they're at is giving your kids the appropriate amount of information about stuff. We're big believers in like more information is better, you know?
Mm.
Sex education, bodily autonomy, consent, all these things. The more you talk about them, the more normal it is. All that sort of stuff. Nobody's left in the dark just wondering, what should I do in this situation? But like, there's also times that they ask us a question and we're like, well, that's pretty complicated. Here's three aspects of this thing. And you're like 30 seconds in and they're sort of eyeing the door.
Yeah, they're checked out.
I had enough information about this 7 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But
the thing with kids is sometimes they'll ask a question, but like, and they'll start getting an answer. But midway through getting that answer, they're like, I actually don't care about this. I think I just wanted to say something out loud.
Sometimes what your kids want is to ask you a question and have you respond, yes, what you thought about that thing was right.
Yeah.
You know. But hey, don't we all?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the other sort of flip side of that is like it, particularly in things like saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to let my kids play Call of Duty with a headset on talking to random strangers on the internet, calling them all kinds of slurs or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Versus like, you know, and unfettered access to the internet and just kind of pulling back on that. But also you got to acknowledge like they will be using all of this stuff. They are going to have phones. They are going to be playing games online. They are going to be going on the internet, all that sort of stuff. So that's the thing I'm kind of grappling with at the moment at the age they're at is like, what are the best ways to kind of introduce them to parts of the internet? I mean, I don't have to worry about them like getting on Facebook because nobody joins Facebook anymore. That's fine.
It's all Instagram.
Everybody's in their Discords now. They're WhatsApps.
But also Snapchat. Like Snapchat's still big with young people, which worries me because I think Snapchat is a bed of depravity. It is an evil, evil place. Even just with like the explore page, it's some of the most brain dead dropkick shit you will ever, ever consume. Like the news, and it's not.
They've got news on Snapchat?
Yeah. Oh, Grunky Pop and Faten Panning just broke up after 2 weeks together. And they're two influencers that you should know about. For some reason.
That's something that I've definitely learned to let go of in my life. The idea that I need to know about everybody and everything. Because
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's like sometimes you see the trending topics on Twitter, which I'm still going to keep calling it Twitter, I think.
Oh, yeah. Fair.
Like, you see the trending topics and it's like, this celebrity, and you haven't heard of them, they're from another country, and they have like 250 million Twitter followers. And it makes me go, hey, there's all kinds of stuff out there. It's too many K-pop groups to possibly ever wrap your head around.
Mm. But we're ARMY here. We're BTS ARMY here.
Yes. I pledge my loyalty to BTS.
Thank you.
Are they still on a little ARMY hiatus?
Yeah, they're in actual ARMY. They are straight up doing military service.
They are officially BTS ARMY.
Yeah, they are BTS ARMY.
I went to design school with a South Korean guy, and he was just kind of jumping around from international school thing to international school thing, so he didn't have to go home and do army.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then after a while, he was like, oh, getting pretty worried. A buddy of mine, like, went home to see his family over the holidays, and there were just, like, soldiers waiting for you at the airport.
Yeah.
It's just dudes, and they're like, gotcha, come on.
The thought of, like, going to war and, like, you're face-to-face with Jimin is crazy to me.
So beautiful.
Whoa, I loved Butter. And then he shoots you in the head.
Thank you. Bam. He puts you down like a dog and you say thank you.
You say thank you, Jimin. Now that we're well acquainted and we've had our goofs and gaffs, it's time to take a trip back to 2021, because you, if I understand correctly, have been playing a game that came out in 2021, and so have I, but you're going to go first. So you've been playing Inscription, correct?
Correct.
Correct. Now, for those of us who haven't played Inscription, would you be able to explain it a little bit?
I guess what I found playing it was that it's quite by design seems set up to sort of defy description a little bit. But it's a deck building roguelike with elements of ARG and escape room type stuff. And then as you go along and play the game, it sort of introduces different mechanics and everything. And then at particular points, it kind of goes, oh, it's a completely different game now. We're just breaking the reality of the game and doing some different stuff. We'll carry over some of those mechanics. And then you do that for a while and it goes, ah, we're doing it again. Which I found very fun.
Yeah.
Found very fun to play along for a bit and then go, wait, what the fuck is happening? which is nice. I feel like that's an experience that you don't get with like AAA games, you know? You don't get with from the big blockbuster games.
Mm.
That's, I think, part of the reason that I've found myself connecting with games like this a bit more, even though we are going to, I think, talk about a AAA game later, is that I've really struggled over the last couple of years with like starting some big budget AAA game and it goes, here's a 17-minute long cinematic that we're just going to kind of get you to walk through while we do a massive exposition dump.
Mm.
And then we're going to show you how to walk with the stick. And then we're going to say, press circle to crouch under this log that we've placed in your way. And then they're like really slowly drip feed you the controls over the next like 2 hours. Feels a lot like with a lot of new games, you know, all of the very kind of like has 150 hours of gameplay. And it's like the first, you don't get to start doing any of it for like 4 hours, you know.
Yeah, the first 4 hours are a tutorial.
Yeah, which really I'm finding more and more as I don't know, get older or whatever, that I'm going through that period and then I'm just putting the game down and not picking it back up.
Yeah. You know?
But yeah, Inscription, I was very much enjoying you basically come to in a creepy little cabin. There's kind of a grotty, pixely 8-bit kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
And you come to and there's a mysterious person saying, hey, you're back. Time to play a game with me. And then you start playing a game and they kind of explain some of it and kind of don't. Which I think that was part of what I enjoyed about it was the lack of hand holding. The kind of, because it does have that, kind of gameplay loop of like Hades and things like that. You play along for a bit and then you die and then you go back to the start and do it again. Knowing the things that you now know from the last time you played through it, you know? And so, really gave me some of those satisfying moments that I get from other pursuits, where you've gone through something a couple of times and then something sort of clicks for you in your head, or you'll get cards in some combination that you didn't get them before, or, you know, some of the other stuff they introduce, there's little sort of mechanics for kind of like fusing cards together or taking attributes from one card and putting them onto another, all that sort of stuff. And then that'll happen in some combination that suddenly gives you like this very, very strong deck of cards. And you go, oh, I could have been doing that the whole time. Oh.
Because it's kind of a horror game as well. Is it not like a psychological horror type business?
Yeah, it's even got kind of Blair Witchy sort of elements to it where after a certain amount of the game, because again, like each time you die, they kind of go, oh, you're back again. And there's this suggestion that you've kind of already been there, the Shining type, you've been here the whole time kind of thing. and then, yeah, there's these bits of kind of lore sprinkled through it as it goes along. You kind of get suggestions from actual characters on cards and stuff like that about what's going on and who's keeping you trapped here and that sort of stuff. And then at a certain point, it breaks out of that entirely. Spoiler alerts for this old game. it sort of breaks out of that entirely and starts giving you like video clips of like a real person. You know, it's actual actors on video kind of thing. And you are sifting through these video clips on a memory card. And it's all a, like a streamer. It's a gaming streamer talking about this game he's been playing called Inscription, and he's opening physical packs of cards and going through them all.
It's also meta. Ooh.
Yeah, and he finds, you know, one that's already been opened and has like coordinates on it, and he goes out to the real life place. So there's this kind of, oh, I'm out in the woods and doing weird stuff kind of vibe. As you sort of scrub through all these things as well, there's little bits of stuff where you start to think to yourself, I should maybe be making a note of that. Like a little symbol somewhere, little times written down and numbers and stuff like that. I started snapping pictures of things on my phone on the screen and going, I feel like I'm going to need to know that later on at some point in the game. But it's very much a game where, like, because you're doing all of these repeated runs of things,
yeah,
even if you kind of do miss something, I don't know, I think there's a lot of replay value in it. I finished it after, I don't know how long I spent playing it, because it had that effect on me where I think the first time I played it, it was like 6 p.m. or something like that. Mm. And my kids had had dinner and stuff, and they went off and did all their bedtime stuff, and they came past and said good night to me, and I was like, good night, and then they went to bed, and then I looked at the clock again and it was like 1 a.m. and I went,
oh yeah.
Up.
Oh yeah.
You got me.
I feel like that's kind of the sign of a game really hooking you in.
Yeah.
Is when you just completely lose track of time.
Oh, very much. It was really, really Moorish. Really like, oh, just one more little round of that. And then, but because it's so sort of, yeah, you play through, you die, you start again. You do kind of, as the game goes on, you can step away from the table you're playing at and look around the cabin that you're in.
Mm.
And there's like little puzzles to be solved and stuff like that. And you get hints for those through the games that you're playing, all that kind of thing. Looking through the rule book that tells you what all the different cards do and everything. And there's stuff scribbled in the margins, you know. And if you solve some of those puzzles, you then get things that stay with you through subsequent playthroughs of the game and are like boons to your things that you're doing. But there gets to be like a real rhythm to it, much like Hades, which was something else that I think I played all the way through. But as you go through it, you go, oh, this combination of things does this particular thing. But you also don't know what you're going to get on any particular run. You're just getting cards as you go through, and then when you start again, it's like, all right, you're down to your core of stuff, you know.
Yeah, sick.
But yeah, just that loop. You just start again and go, oh, here I am again. And you don't really sort of say, oh, you know, it's not like the very old days of video games. When I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid playing Gauntlet on a coin-operated machine. Remember coins, everybody? Remember coins?
I don't know what that is. I'm young and pretty.
That's right.
I don't know what a coin is.
It's a bloody cashless economy. And, And like, I think a lot of people my age who have that nostalgia for old games from the, like, you know, the NES and Super Nintendo and Mega Drive kind of era, and you go back and play some of them, particularly arcade games, and you go, this is fucked. This is way too hard.
Yeah.
Like, people like to complain about, oh, games aren't hard enough now because you die and then you just start again at a checkpoint. It's like, good. That's better than you die, fuck you, start the whole game again. I don't want to do that.
I think it's commendable that people want a challenge. They want a challenging experience. But I think it's actually good that games have now come far enough that you can choose just how hard they are, rather than a game coming out and just being fuck off difficult. And like, if you can't beat it, too bad. Like, it means that everybody can play the game. You know, like, you don't have to be the best at video games. Like, games back then were fucking hard. I tried the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy years ago, around the time it came out, and that shit was fucking hard because Crash Bandicoot was hard. It was a hard game, and I got bored because I wasn't doing well, so I just ended up playing something else. And I'm sure that there are Crash fans in the crowd who will be like, no, go back.
Die Hard, Crash Bandicoot, Speedrunners.
But, the game that I want to talk about was pretty hard, and it was kicking me in the head when I played it, but then I ended up finishing it, and I felt really good about myself, felt like the best at video games. But we're not going to talk about that yet, because there's also another game that you told me you've been playing, which kind of came out in 2021 as well. It had a release in 2021 for the PlayStation 5, and that's Ghost of Tsushima, which yes. I would argue is a very different game. To Inscription.
It's extremely different. And it's much more in the ballpark of kind of what I was describing of game that you start off and there's a bunch of cinematic stuff and it goes, hey, you're a cool samurai. Up, somebody's thrown you off a bridge.
Classic.
And you've come to and you lost all your shit and you got to remember how to do stuff, all that kind of thing. It's a great big open world. But I guess for that kind of game, for that like...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah, open world, sandbox, Assassin's Creed kind of vibe. Like there's certainly games like that that I have played and enjoyed a great deal over the years, you know? Mm. Like your GTAs and your like the first couple of Assassin's Creed games, and then boy, they made a lot of them, didn't they?
Yeah, they didn't stop, and it got to a point where they were like, we can't keep doing the same thing, so it's pirates now, it's British people, it's whatever the other one was. They kind of just
kept... Vikings.
Yeah, it's Vikings. It's Vikings, it's pirates, it's British people.
It's Egyptians.
It's Egyptians.
It's Greeks.
Yeah, they were like, we need to stay with the thing that we're doing because Assassins is cool. But we also need to make it a little bit different or else people are going to get mad at us. And it's funny. It's funny. Because they're coming back with Assassin's Creed Mirage. And like I saw the trailer for that game and I was like, oh, this is Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a remake, but it was actually a completely new game.
Oh.
yeah.
Like I fucking hated the overarching like story container of that series of games where it was like you're a cool assassin in Jerusalem or whatever, but what if you were also a guy lying in a matrix chair?
what if you're also a guy who was sleeping?
Yeah, and then like just every time throughout any of those games where they'd go, you are immersed in this huge world we've built, what if we just yank you out of that real hard for like 10 minutes and get you to walk around a lab where you can't stab anyone? Zero stabbings in the lab.
Yeah.
We talk to you about, I don't know, Crusaders and Templars running a Fortune 500 company or some shit. I did not care for that.
Yeah. It was very much like, oh, you know, we want to give you two different experiences and like kind of further the story in some way to but make it like a multifaceted story. And it's like, yeah, but you could have just stayed being a guy.
Could have just done the story you were doing. Yeah, I remember wondering if it was like an attempt to make the character like that you are playing more identifiable to a contemporary audience, you know? Yeah, more relatable to be like, I wish I was Neo getting plugged into the Matrix kind of thing.
Yeah.
But to me, it just felt like you already sold me on the idea.
Yeah.
You already sold me on the idea of I'm a guy cruising around in Rome or whatever.
Mm.
You don't need to do a whole other thing. That's fine. Did you ever see the movie?
No. I saw the DVD on a shelf at my old job And I was like, maybe I'll watch that someday. And you know what? I think I'll probably go through a period where I'm feeling really weird and I decide to watch as many video game adaptation movies as I possibly can. And then end that experience and go, do I feel any less weird? And I probably won't, but I think I'll get a lot out of the experience. But I'm guessing you've seen it.
It's one of those movies that I know I've seen, but I didn't store any memories.
Yeah.
I didn't store any memories.
Yeah.
How about this though? Michael Fassbender is the lead. And it's got bloody Marion Cotillard, Brendan Gleeson, Jeremy Irons. They were just banging out the money for that one.
Everyone makes sense in that movie except for Michael Fassbender for me. Like, it feels like, unless I'm wrong, and it's not like the Assassin's Creed I'm thinking, like it's not set in the first Assassin's Creed game?
It's set in 1492 and 2016.
Okay, right. But
so
like,
he plays it, it's pretty much the same as the first one where
he plays Ezio, right?
He's playing Aguilar de Nerja, I think. In 1986, he is adolescent Callum Lynch.
Okay.
And then he's grown up Cal later on. Sentenced to death for murdering Aguilar. A pimp.
Oh.
And then he gets put in the Animus.
Yeah.
The worst.
And he's Aguilar.
Plot element.
Yeah. And Aguilar's in Rome? No.
Maybe.
Greece?
Maybe it's somewhere.
I don't know. I don't fucking care.
Not
but
a geography guy. But I'm getting distracted from Ghosts of Tsushima, which is I've played a lot of those games and it's just sometimes they will hook me. And the rhythm of the game, well, like I'll get into the rhythm of the game where it's like, hey, there's these kinds of the same task that you can do in this part of the map and every other part of the map. And that one just hooked me with the like, oh, I'll just do one more thing over there. I'll whistle for my horse and I'll ride over there and I'll have a duel with a guy. I'll make a decision that concerns my honor. Honor. Yeah. They're caring a lot about honor in that game.
Oh, love honor. Honor's so important, right?
Yeah. But it's like, do you want to beat the Mongols or do you want to be honorable? You know? Turns out you can't do both.
Can't do both.
You will upset your uncle in the course of playing this game.
Ooh.
He will feel that the family honor has been besmirched.
Uh-huh.
And eventually you will have to choose whether or not to kill your uncle.
Okay. Cool. I mean,
so if you got really strong feelings about your uncle and whether or not you want to kill him, might be the game for you.
Cool. I mean, like, sure. I have just become so disenfranchised from AAA games.
Yeah.
In the past, probably actually ever since I started working in games media. And from my personal experience, I saw so many games come out and they were all kind of like okay or like doing the same thing or trying to do too much.
Mm.
And then I saw lots and lots of little indie games that were trying to outdo themselves and make them like stand out from the bunch. So there was that extra bit of love and passion, right?
Or that you had to be doing something new or interesting.
Mm,
you know?
Exactly, because you've got to be doing something new and interesting to kind of stand out. Like Inscription is so unlike anything else, and that's so awesome, you know. And then you've got a lot of AAA games coming out that, you know, they are still doing new things, but it also just feels like they're trying too hard to be a movie, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I don't give a fuck about at all? Is like when they're showing off, like, you know, the models in a game or whatever, and they're like, oh, when we zoom right in on this thing, we can see every one of the hairs on this character's head and all their paws and everything. And I'm like, that's cool, but when I'm playing the game, I can't see any of that shit.
Yeah.
I can't see any of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I got in the last couple of years, I've got a PS5 and a 4K TV, and yeah, like, it's not like you can see any of that stuff on the screen when you got a character that's just whirling around and doing stuff.
Mm.
Like, yes, a bunch of stuff looks nice, but I completely agree that I think the directions that they are trying to advance those kinds of games in are often not anything that actually, like, improves the experience of playing the game for me. And totally. I think you can really see the evidence of that in playing a game like Inscription or many other indie games. Even things like, I know this is a very old game by now, but like even stuff like Hotline Miami and things where it's like, it looks like shit, you know? Yeah. Like by design, it's a really, really sort of lo-fi, sort of crunchy looking game. But people are very enamored with like the vibe or the interesting mechanic or the soundtrack or like even just that it's not the same attempting to be very, very realistic, muted color palette of so many of those really big budget games. I would so much rather that somebody was putting the effort into making a game feel good to play or be interesting or challenging or have something kind of unique going on than to go, hey, we made another game that you've got to play for 150 hours.
Yay. Like
and I can really accept, obviously, that due to my old age, that like my life is different to how it was when I was like 18 or 19 or 20 and playing video games, and you're like, I have no obligations. I can spend many hours, you know, sitting on the couch high playing Grand Theft Auto 4 and looking in every corner of the city and all that sort of stuff. But like I don't have an unlimited amount of time to devote to stuff anymore, so I don't want to feel like I'm just filling hours.
Yeah.
Or like ticking boxes or whatever. And when you were saying about like the devotion to hyperrealism and everything in games just not doing anything for you, it was making me think about a conversation I keep having about like new movies that I have seen over the last couple of years. I keep finding myself having the same experience of watching a movie and going, this is really cool. I'm really enjoying this movie for the first hour.
Mm.
And then the last 30 to 60 minutes of the movie just kind of starts to feel like they're treading water and they lose me a bit and I come out a bit disappointed and I'm like, you know what I would have really liked is if that movie was 30 minutes shorter. If you just trimmed 20 or 30 minutes out of that movie, right? And I don't mean that like in a, I don't have the attention span to watch a movie kind of way, but just a lot of movies that I've seen that are like 2 to 2.5 hours long. And I wind up coming out of them and thinking, I think the movie suffered for the additional content. I think like, yeah, if you had taken half an hour out of that, trimmed out a couple of plot lines or whatever, I probably would have come out of it going, fantastic, great. Instead of coming out and going, kind of lost me at the end, and now I'm out of here just with a kind of a meh feeling instead of a, that was great. And that's how I feel about a lot of AAA games, where I'm like...
Yeah. Yeah, there are too many movies that are over 2 hours that don't need to be.
And I don't know if that's just like a modern thing that is happening where it's like, hey, we're spending $150 million on this movie and it's a big budget extravaganza and we want to make people feel like they're getting their money's worth or whatever. But it's like, if you know, it's like fucking Ant-Man 4. It doesn't need to be 2 hours and 20 minutes long or whatever. My kids are not sitting through that shit.
Nope.
And adults are not interested in Ant-Man for 2 hours and 20 minutes long. You know, I hope not.
Yeah.
Maybe they are. Maybe they're
it's
like...
It's a funny side character. And that being said, I love Paul Rudd. I think he's a cool guy. I love the bit that he does on Conan O'Brien. It makes me happy. But like... You don't need an Ant-Man movie to be that long.
No, and I more get the sense that they're like, hey, we're putting all this money into it. We got to put it up there on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Instead of what should be the driver is, what's the person who is consuming this content? And God, that's a vile phrase to use. Sorry. What's the person who's choking down the slime?
you know, slogging up the hogwash. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have a little bit less slime in my pipe. Thank you. But I feel like that about AAA games. I'm like, you've got this massive studio and you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases on some games. You get the sense with some of those games that like it's the commerce driving it before the how much you're supposed to enjoy playing the game. When they say it's got this many hours of content in it, often what we understand that to mean is it's got however many of this same thing that you can go and do over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're in a new bit of the map and now you can go and interrogate this guy and you can intimidate this guy and you can stop a bank robbery over here, whatever.
Mm.
And like, you know, like I was saying, sometimes a game will just sort of hook me and I'll go, oh, the gameplay feels good. Like Ghost of Tsushima, I was enjoying like just the general kind of fighting people with a sword. The little parry mechanics and stuff. You could do some cool stuff by the end of the game, much like the Sony Spider-Man game. I think I played all the way through that because, again, much like kind of reminded me of like the old, what is it, Riot, Batman Arkham games, you know?
Rocksteady.
Yeah. Apologies to Rocksteady. But yeah, like that was, again, really similar. Big game, loads of content, hundreds of hours of stuff, gradually drip feeding you all of your abilities and your gadgets and all that shit. And by the end of it, if you're into it, you can be doing cool big combos and parry-based stuff and all that sort of shit. But
totally.
I do just find at this point that it is a total lottery as to which game will grab me. And this might have been exacerbated by getting the relatively new thing of like PlayStation Pass.
Yeah.
And whatever the Xbox equivalent of that is.
Xbox Game Pass and PlayStation
Game Pass. PlayStation Plus.
That's right. Plus.
And yeah, so you pay your monthly thing and they go, here's a great big catalog of games and we've chucked tons of Ubisoft ones on there and there's heaps of AAA games and everything. But it kind of has what I assume is the unintended side effect of, because the barrier to entry is so low, I don't have to pay $110. That's right, anybody listening from America, they're making me pay $110 for a new game. Sorry. We used to pay with coins. We used to pay with coins to play a game. but now it's not like you've forked over a shitload of money to play this game and you're like, oh, I better keep going with it for a while and, you know, see if it clicks for me. Now you can play something for like 2 or 3 hours and go, nah, fuck it.
Yeah.
Nah, you missed it. You missed your chance to hook me.
Mm.
I'm out of here.
And I feel like that hook early on is so important, you know?
Yeah. And now, and for something like Inscription as well, it hooks you and then it's not 80 hours long. It's not 90 hours long or whatever. It's just, I reckon I played through the entire thing in like between 5 and 10 sessions over a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And it was done. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't sitting there plugging away at it for weeks and weeks or anything. I just had a good time, and then I went, that was cool. And it made me want to just sort of jump back in and start it again, because I was like, I feel like there's stuff I could have done differently that would make some different things happen.
Totally. And I would argue that Inscription was probably one of the highlights of 2021. I think it won the Game of the Year award at the Game Developers Conference of that year, which is really awesome. For that year, as they should. And there were also a bunch of other really cool games that came out in 2021. And I'm going to kind of go through a few of them. We'll start with one that I've played a bit of recently. I finished I finished in 2021 and then I revisited again just because I wanted to. I think the first time I played it on Switch and then this time I've been playing it on either Xbox or PlayStation, one of the two. And that was Death's Door. And that was another kind of Souls-like where you played this little crow and you're a reaper. The process of death is kind of within like this office space where it's all very business focused, right? And you're just one of many reapers that exist in this office space, and the big soul that you go to take, that you go to reap, that's given you guff and you've defeated it, gets taken away by this other reaper who's clearly been in the other side of the world, like the real world, for a little too long. He's big and he's fucked up, right? And in order to get the soul that, you know, you rightly deserve back, he makes you go and get, I think he does or some other guy does. I've started playing again and it's just completely left my mind, of course. But you have to go get three other big souls who have been trying to avoid death for a very long time now. And that game is fucking hard. It is hard as shit because it's a Souls-like, you know, and Dark Souls hard, and in turn Death's all hard. And that game is so fucking difficult. There's no difficulty levels. You play and it's hard. But in turn, I got absolutely destroyed by that game. I got really angry. I was actively flipping off my TV. And every time I did well, though, I was jumping for fucking joy. And I was like, I am the best at video games. Nobody is as good at video games as I am. And that feeling of success, I realized was why so many people play and love the Dark Souls games, is because there's that difficulty level, and then overcoming that difficulty is what feels so freaking good. I get it. I understand it. I'm never going to play a Dark Souls game, but I get it. I understand.
I played Elden Ring.
Oh, yeah.
When that came out. And that was after playing Bloodborne and like bouncing off it pretty hard. So I played it and was like, oh, feels like I'm really stuck in this little bit of this game, and like you die and then you're back and so on.
Yeah.
And like the game does not do much hand holding at all.
No.
Really not helping you out with anything. But then I saw people talking about Elden Ring as being a much better sort of entry into that, because it was like, oh, if you're having a trouble with something, you just turn around and walk in another direction for a while. Do something else, you know.
Do something else.
And so, yeah, I played that and went through that and found it a lot better. And then I went back and played Bloodborne after playing Elden Ring and was like, oh, all the gameplay mechanics make sense to me now. And,
yeah.
And then played through that and had a much better time. And like, I think to your comments before about difficulty levels in games and being able to just kind of turn the difficulty for stuff up and down, and depending on the game that you're playing, you can just like adjust it from moment to moment in the game as well. Yeah, I'm sure you've probably discussed before all of the like discourse around that stuff with the Souls games in particular, where it's like, oh, you know, all the sort of get good kind of shit, which is annoying and stupid.
Yeah, totally.
But by the same token, it's like, it's very obviously been designed as a very specific experience and way of interacting with the game. And like, there's nothing wrong with playing a game and going, or like anything else, like listening to an album or watching a movie or whatever and going, I'm not connecting with this and I don't think it's for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anybody has any obligation to like keep doing a thing till you like it. Life's too short for that shit.
Oh yeah. I think while I think it's really cool to have difficulty levels, and I think that's such an awesome kind of moment we are in video games, where anybody of any gaming level can play a game and have a similar experience, if not just the only difference being difficulty. I think that's very cool. At the same time, in the same breath, I am also completely fine with a game just not being for me or not being for someone else purely based on difficulty alone. Like I enjoyed as much as I did play of Elden Ring, but at the end of the day, I didn't finish it because I was like, you know what? I don't think I have the time and energy to put into getting good at this game. And I'm fine with that. I'm moving on and I'm doing something else. And at the same time as seeing that Elden Ring isn't for me, I can also see it for what it is, which was probably one of the best games of that year, hands down. I'm fine with saying that. But yeah, and Death's Door, in that same sense, was really, really hard, but at the same time, clearly wasn't hard enough because I finished it. And I'm notably terrible at video games. So if a game can make me feel good at them, then I would say that's my game of the year. And that's why it was in 2021. Death's Door was my game of the year. Yeah.
Game of the year. Same publisher as Inscription. There you go.
That's true. It's, was it Devolver Digital? Well,
Devolver Digital. Same publisher of Hotline Miami, another notoriously hard Deathloop type game.
And so I would go as far as to say as Devolver Digital was probably 2021's publisher of the year for me.
And bloody good on them, in my opinion.
But that's about all the freaking time we've got. So, Andrew, how can we find you?
You can find me on the podcast Punta Vista, where we talk about, I don't know, I guess whatever's going on in the world of like trucks that have turned over and spilled loose meat onto the highway, police accidentally shooting themselves in the United States, Bigfoot sightings.
Awesome.
All the important stuff, you know? Actually, specifically the opposite of that. You're often covering the least important news stories that you can possibly imagine.
But it's good because nobody else is going to do it.
That's right. Everybody's busy talking about all the stuff you've already heard about, you know? So yes, we have a firm policy that as soon as any of us have seen a story somewhere more than once, it is stricken from the record. We will not be talking about it. If a beloved listener submits a story to the show and says, you guys should talk about this, we say, no, you've already heard about it. No.
Clearly we can't because you read it.
That's right. You ruined it, we say. Yeah. In our adversarial relationship with our beloved listeners.
It's a good way to be, absolutely. And thank you so much for coming on the show as well. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for being my friend.
Oh, thank you for being my friend.
Isn't friendship beautiful, everybody?
Friendship is beautiful. And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? Here's one from Cully M with the title, Super Interesting. Every episode of this show so far has been really interesting and goes way beyond the usual pop culture mainstream gaming discussion. It might be hard to garner an audience for a show without a strict format or premise, but that is what makes this show so great. I love the variety of topics, the guests, and the host. Ruby has been super passionate about every discussion so far. Can't wait to hear more. I appreciate when people are like, you know, this rocks, I really like it. And in the same breath going like, I don't know how this is going to be successful, but I like it either way. Like, right. I think it's great.
I think it's great that someone with your unconventional looks can... What? What are you saying to me?
Huh? I think it's really great what you do despite being so strange and so off-putting. No, but that genuinely was a very nice review. Thank you very much. And hey, if you really like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Backpocket over on Patreon, where you can get access to our lovely Discord full of all sorts of buds. And if you support us at the silver or gold tier, you can get access to even more audio content just like this. You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. AEST, and on TikTok, where we are constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, or the Twitter and Threads, whatever, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in, and as the human embodiment of the year 2021 would say, bye!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.